didn't want someone honest in my life as well, if I ever chose to get married anyway. But he'd need to find a better way of delivering his words if he wanted a chance of sticking around. Okay, dates, she said, sitting back in her chair and thinking. I was never good at archery, but if there's someone who is skilled at that, it might look nice. I think I can do that. Oh, and I've already done horseback riding, so that's out. Right. Cooking, too. She smiled to herself, as if she couldn't believe I'd allowed that date to happen. And it turned out disastrous. Well, Kyle and Henry did great, and Fox wasn't terrible. True, I amended. I found myself thinking about Henry and me cooking alone in the kitchen, the date no one knew about. Sweetheart, I think instead of going for something flashy, you might try simpler dates. Have tea, take a walk in the gardens. Meals are always a good standard. You can't eat too many times. It might look better than you riding a horse anyway. I'd been trying to avoid anything that might be too personal, but those types of dates gave the impression of closeness, which was something I thought the public wanted. Maybe she was right. If I went in with a list of safe topics and questions, perhaps it wouldn't feel so bad anyway. Thanks, Mom. I'll probably give that a go. Anytime, sweetie. I'm always here for you. I know. I fidgeted with my dress. Sorry if I've been a pain lately. She reached across to me. Edlin, you're under a lot of stress. We understand. And short of becoming an axe murderer, there's nothing you could do to make me love you less. I laughed. An axe murderer? That's your limit? Well, maybe even then. She winked at me. Go on. If you're doing several dates this week, you should make a plan. I nodded, and for reasons I wasn't entirely sure of, scuttled into her lap for a second. Oof, she complained as my weight settled. Love you, Mom. She wrapped her arms around me tightly. I love you too, more than you could ever know. I kissed her cheek and hopped up, thinking of the week ahead, and hoping it would somehow appease everyone. But those thoughts were driven from my mind when I stepped into the hallway and found Baden there, waiting for me. Chapter 29. Baden stood and then crossed the hall. The midday sun was filtering in through the windows, making the space warm and covering everything with a slight hint of yellow. Even his dark skin looked brighter somehow. Stalking me? I asked, trying to be playful. The hard set of his eyes told me he wasn't in the mood.
I wasn't sure how else to get a hold of you. You're so hard to find.
I crossed my arms. Clearly you're upset. Why don't you tell me what it's all about so we can move on? He made a face, displeased with my offer.
I want to leave.
I felt like I'd run full speed into a brick wall. Excuse me?
Last night was embarrassing. I asked you out and you shot me down.
I held up a hand. I never actually said no, you didn't let me get that far.
Were you going to say yes?
He sounded skeptical. I raised my arms and let them drop. I'll never know, because you got an attitude and walked away.
Are you seriously going to lecture me on having a bad attitude?
I gasped. How dare he? I got closer to him, though even at my full height, I was dwarfed by his frame. You know I could have you punished for speaking to me that way, right?
So now you're going to bully me. First, you reject me, then you use me for a little snippet of entertainment on the report, and now I've had to spend my entire morning tracking you down after you told me you would meet with me during breakfast.
You're one person out of 20. I have work to do. How self-centered can you possibly be? His eyes widened, and he pointed at his chest.
Me? Self-centered?
I tried to tuck my heart away, refusing to let him hurt me. You know, you were one of my favorites. I was going to keep you around for a long time. My family liked you, and I admired your talent.
I don't need your family's stamp of approval. You were nice to me for all of an hour, then you disappear and it's like nothing happened at all. I have the freedom to leave, and I'm ready to go.
Then go! I started walking away. I didn't have to endure that. He yelled down the hall, taking one last stab at me.
My friends all told me I was crazy to put my name in. They were so right.
I kept going.
You're pushy, you're selfish. What was I thinking?
I turned a corner, even though it didn't lead to where I was going. I could find my way eventually. I held it in, keeping the brave face I'd always been taught to have. No one could know how much that hurt. After a trip that took twice as long as it should have, I finally made it to the third floor. I started crying the second I hit the landing, unable to stay composed any longer. Baden's words repeated themselves in my head, and I clutched my stomach, feeling them like literal blows. Before any of the boys had shown up, I'd had a list of ideas for how to get rid of them. I planned on making them so angry they'd say plenty of the things Baden just had. But I'd done nothing to provoke him. And he said them anyway. What was so wrong with me that I got rejected simply for being myself? And his last words did exactly what he wanted them to. It looked like I'd had millions of choices when I drew the names nearly a month ago. How many men hadn't entered because they already objected to me on some level? Did people think I was pushy? Selfish? Which were the public enjoying more? The sweet moments between me and the boys, or the moments when I looked like a failure? I straightened up to head to my room, only to see that Eric was waiting outside my door for me and had undoubtedly just watched my crying fit. I swiped at my face, trying to clean it up, but there was no hiding the puffy eyes or red cheeks. Eric seeing me like this was almost as bad as the original issue, but the only way to make it seem as if it was nothing was to act as if it was nothing. I walked over to Eric, achingly aware of the sadness in his eyes, and he bowed as I approached.
I feel like maybe I've come at a bad time, he said,
the tiniest hint of sarcasm in his voice. I smiled, ever so slightly, I answered, acknowledging my hurt against my better judgment. Still, I'm happy to help you if I can. Eric pressed his lips together, unsure if he should go on.
I wanted to talk to you about Henry.
He didn't send me, he insisted, holding up a hand.
I think he'd come to you himself if he could speak on his own, but he's embarrassed.
Eric swallowed.
He told me about the kiss.
I nodded. I figured.
He's afraid he crossed a line. He said something about holding on to you and that he probably should have let go, but then he didn't and...
I shook my head. That makes it sound much worse than it was. I stood there, lost. We were trying to communicate, and when the words didn't work, well, that did. For some reason, I was upset admitting this to Eric, even though he already knew everything.
So you're not cross with him?
I heaved out a breath, almost laughing because the idea was so bizarre. No, he's one of the kindest people I know. I'm not upset with him in the slightest. Eric nodded.
Would it be all right if I told him as much?
Absolutely. I wiped at my eyes again, pulling off smudged eyeliner in the process. Ugh.
Are you okay, Your Highness?
His voice was so tender, but mercifully, lacking pity. I almost explained what had happened to him, but it was borderline inappropriate. It was one thing to talk about Henry, it was another to discuss the other suitors at length. I am, or will be. Don't worry about me, just make sure Henry is all right. His expression changed slightly, and I could see the weight of that roll in his eyes.
I do my best.
I studied him. Henry really wants it, doesn't he? Eric shook his head.
There is no it. He wants you.
After Baden's heart-shattering speech, it was hard to imagine this was possible. But Eric confirmed it as he went on.
He talks of you endlessly. Each day in the men's parlor, I'm translating political science books to him, or trying to explain the difference between the absolute monarchy you have here and the constitutional monarchy he grew up with in Swendway.
Eric paused to chuckle.
He even studies the way your brothers walk and stand. He wants to be worthy of you in every way.
I swallowed, overcome by this admission. Smirking, trying to dull the feeling, I replied.
But he can't even speak to me.
I know, he answered solemnly.
Which is why I wonder.
Wonder what? He rubbed his hand over his mouth, trying to decide if he should continue.
It's easiest to learn new languages when you're a child, and it can be taught later in life, but the accent will probably always be bad. Henry simply has a difficult time retaining it. At the rate he's going, it would be years before you'd be able to carry on the most basic conversations. And the nuances of languages, slang and colloquialisms, would take years beyond that. Do you understand what that would mean?
That I wouldn't be able to communicate with him for who knew how long. By the time the selection should end, we still would hardly know each other. I do. Two small words, but they felt massive, like they were filling up the entire hallway, crushing me.
I just thought you should know that. I wanted you to be aware of what things might look like if you had developed feelings for him, too.
Thank you, I breathed.
Do you?
He asked suddenly.
Have feelings for him?
I'd been so emotional already that the question sent me into a tailspin. I honestly have no idea how I feel about anything.
Hey.
He reached out a hand before thinking better of it.
I'm sorry. I was being nosy. That's really none of my business, and you're obviously having a rough day. I'm an ass.
I wiped at my nose. No. You're trying to be a good friend. To him? To me? It's no big deal. He tucked his hands behind his back.
Well, I am, you know?
Huh? He sighed, seeming embarrassed.
Your friend? If you need one.
It was such a simple offer, yet generous in a million ways. I couldn't imagine having a better one. He beamed, but was quiet. It seemed like the times when we were silent were some of the easiest. Eventually, he cleared his throat.
I'm sure you have work to do, but I hate leaving you alone when you feel so bad.
No, I kind of prefer it. Eric gave me a half-hearted smile.
If you say so.
He bowed.
Hope your day gets better.
It already has, I promised, walking around him to get into my room, a kind smile on my face. Miss, Nina asked as I came through the doorway. I couldn't imagine how awful I looked. Hi, Nina. Are you all right? Not exactly, but I'll get there. Can you bring me the selection forms, please? I have work to do. Though the confusion on her face was plain, she did as I asked. She also brought a box of tissues. Thank you. I thought I was past the worst of it, but I did tear up again as I looked at the pictures, wondering who was maybe here despite having reservations, and hating each of them on the off chance it applied to them all. Nina, could you get me some paper? Once again, she obeyed, bringing a cup of tea along with a notebook. She really was too good. I tried to plot out my week. Apsel's application said he played the piano, so I'd arrange for us to work on duets tomorrow morning. And in the early evening, I'd walk outside with Tavish. Monday would be tea with Gunner, and a photography walk with Harrison. Dad would probably love that. I finished my plans and set down my pile of papers beside me. Without a word, Nina started a bath. I sipped the last of my tea and put the cup back on the table next to the pot so she wouldn't have to go hunting for it later. In the bathroom, steam was filling the air, and I planted myself in front of the mirror, pulling pins out of my hair. Between the soothing water and Nina's calming presence, I was free from most of Baden's harsh words by the time I was ready to dry off. "Do you want to talk about it?" Nina asked quietly, pulling a brush through my hair. "There's not much to say. People will throw food at me. People will throw words at me. And I have to be stronger than that if I'm going to survive." She let out a disapproving sound, and I watched her troubled eyes in the mirror. "What?" Nina stopped brushing for a minute, looking at my reflection. "For all my problems, I'd never trade them for yours. I'm so sorry." I pulled myself up. "Nothing to be sorry for. This was what I was born to do." "That's not fair, though, is it? I thought eliminating the castes meant that no one was born into anything. Does that apply to everyone except you?"
"Apparently."
It didn't matter that Apsel's skills were so good I praised him endlessly, and it didn't matter that the photos of Tavish and me in the garden were positively beautiful. With all the work I put in, neither of those things were headline material Monday morning. Above the pictures of me and my dates was an entirely different story. "It's work," screamed the headline above a candid shot of me yawning. An exclusive source had shared that I felt the selection process was more work than anything, and that we make it look exciting. All I could think about was how badly I wanted to hurt Mila Warren. I couldn't blame her completely, though. Baden's expose on how staged the selection was helped nothing. He described me at length as frigid, two-faced, and distant. He spoke of our one charming moment alone, and then my intentional disconnection from him, and said there was no way he could have stayed in the palace, living under such a lie. I knew it was likely that he was paid an exorbitant amount of money for his story, and that he was probably worrying about a mountain of debt for his education, but I felt certain he would have said it all for free. Juxtaposing those stories with the one of my weekend dates cheapened everything about them. It was a waste of effort, and worse, it was visibly taking a toll on Dad. Weeks had passed. He still had no idea how to address the caste issues, and pockets of rioters were calling for the end of the monarchy. I was failing in every possible way. After breakfast, I went to my room, looking at my plans for the day. Were they worthless now? Was there a way to make these dates better? I heard a knock and turned to see Kyle standing at the door. I ran into his arms without a second thought.
"Hey,"
he said, holding me tight.
"I don't know what to do. Everything's just getting worse and worse."
He pulled back and lowered his eyes to meet mine.
"Some of the guys are confused. They don't know if they're being used, Edlin,"
he continued in a whisper, presumably so Nina wouldn't hear his words.
"I know our first kiss was for show. Is it all for show? If it is, you need to come clean."
I stared into his eyes. How had I ever thought he was anything less than smart and funny and handsome and kind? I didn't want to respond in a whisper, so I signaled for Nina to leave. And once she had closed the door behind her, I faced him again. "It's complicated, Kyle."
"I'm a very intelligent person. Explain."
His words were calm, an invitation more than a demand. "If you had asked me the night before everyone came, I would have said it was all a joke. But it's not anymore. Not to me." The words shocked me. I'd fought caring about these boys, and I was still terrified of them getting closer. Even now, Kyle was walking the edge of my comfort zone, and I was unsure how I'd manage if he pushed himself over the line. "You matter to me," I confessed. "A lot of you do. But do I think I'll get married?" I shrugged. I can't say.
That doesn't make sense. Either you want this or you don't.
That's not fair. When your name was called, did you want to participate? Would you say the same thing now? I didn't realize how tense he'd become until he let out a breath and closed his eyes.
Okay, I can understand that.
It's been harder than I thought, with so many disasters along the way. And I'm not as good at showing my emotions as other girls, so it comes across like I don't care, even when I do. I like to keep things to myself. It looks bad, I know, but it's real. He'd been around me long enough to know it was true.
You need to address this. You need to say something publicly about that story,
he insisted, his eyes focused on mine. I rubbed my temple. I'm not sure that's a good idea. What if I somehow make it worse? He poked my stomach, something we hadn't done since we were children.
How can the truth make anything worse?
Well, that confirmed all my anxieties. Admitting how much this meant to me now might also mean owning up to the origins of this particular selection. With the way things were going, that wouldn't win me any sympathy. He turned me around and pointed me toward my table and chairs.
Here, let's sit for a minute.
I sat beside him, piling up some of the dress ideas I had been working on.
Those are impressive, Edlin,
he remarked. I gave him a weak smile. Thank you, but it's really just a bunch of scribbles.
Don't do that,
he said.
Don't make it seem like it's not important.
I remembered those words, and they soothed me. Kyle pulled over a handful of the pencils and started some sketches of his own. What are you drawing? I asked, looking at the little boxes.
An idea I've been experimenting with. I've been reading about some of the poorer provinces. One of their bigger issues is housing right now.
Because of the manufacturing boom?
Yeah.
He continued to sketch, making practically perfect straight lines. Dad did what he could to encourage more industrial growth in some of the primarily agricultural provinces. It was good for everyone if things could be processed where they were grown. But as that took off, more and more people moved to be closer to those areas, meaning not everyone had adequate housing.
I know a little bit about how much it costs to get supplies, and I figured out that it'd be possible to build these smaller huts, basically like family cubicles, fairly inexpensively. I've been playing with the idea over the last few weeks. If there was someone I could get the design to, they might be able to implement it.
I looked at the little structure, barely as big as my bathroom, abutted against an identical box. They each had a door and a side-facing window. A little tube at the top caught rainwater, and a small bucket collected it by the door. Vents lined the top, and a small tarp jutted out in front, shading the front of the space. They look so tiny, though.
But they'd feel like a mansion if you were homeless.
I exhaled, thinking that was probably true. There can't be space for a bathroom in there.
No, but most people use facilities inside the plants. That's what I read, anyway. This would be strictly for shelter, which means workers would be more rested, have better health, and there's just something special about having a place to call your own.
I watched Kyle, his eyes focused on the extra little details he was adding to his work. I knew that hit home for him, that he was aching for anything that truly belonged to him. He pushed the paper away gently, adding it to the others.
Not nearly as exciting as a ball gown, but that's all I know how to draw.
He concluded with a laugh. And you do it so well.
I just wanted to distract you for a minute. But I don't know what else to do.
I reached over and held his hand. That you came at all is enough. I shouldn't let myself sulk too much anyway. I need to come up with a plan of action.
Like talking about it?
I shrugged. Maybe. I have to speak with my dad first. I could tell he thought I was being silly, but he didn't know what was going on. Not really. And even as someone in the know, it was hard to understand. Thanks for coming, Kyle. I owe you one.
You owe me too. I'm still waiting for that chat with my mom,
he winked, not too upset I hadn't delivered yet. My promise was still in the back of my head, and I'd had more than one opportunity to bring it up with Miss Marley, but now I was the problem, not her. It was getting harder to imagine the palace without Kyle around. Of course, I haven't forgotten. He poked my stomach again and I giggled.
I know.
Let me go talk to my parents. I need to figure out what to do.
Okay.
He put an arm around me and walked me out the door, parting with me at the stairs. From there, I went straight to the office, nervous about how tired Dad looked when I came in and cleared my throat. He popped his head up from the papers, shoving the stack of them into a drawer as if I wouldn't see.
Hey, sweetie, I thought you were going to be working on the selection side of things this week.
Well, that was the plan. But I'm wondering if that will even be of any help right now. He was crestfallen.
I don't know how this happened, Edlin. I'm sorry.
I'm the one who should be sorry. Baden exaggerated things, but the barest points of his story were real. And with the mayor, I said those things out loud. It's true. But I was simply venting about the work of it all. Ask Mom, she was there. Everything got twisted around.
I already spoke to her, honey, and I'm not upset with you. I just can't understand why Mila would do that. It's like everyone is taking aim at us right now.
He kept opening his mouth like he wanted to say more, but he was so confused by the overwhelming unhappiness of the public, he didn't know where to start. I'm trying, Dad, but I don't think it's good enough. Which made me wonder if maybe we wanted to try something different. He shrugged.
I'm up for almost anything at the moment.
Let's switch the focus. No one trusts me right now. Let's bring Camille in for a visit and let people see how in love Aaron is with her. He always does much better in the spotlight. I can come in and talk about their influence on me, and then we can pick up with the selection shortly after. Try to blend one love story into another. He stared at his desk, contemplating.
I don't know where you get some of your ideas, but that's inspired, Edlin, and I think Aaron will be beside himself. Let me make a call and see if she can even come before we say anything, all right?
Absolutely.
I want you to plan a party for her. You two should know each other better than you do.
As if I didn't have anything else to worry about. I'll start at once. He picked up the telephone and I went back to my room, hoping this would be enough to get things back on the right track. Chapter 30. 2 days later, I was standing on the tarmac next to my giddy brother, who was holding an obnoxiously large bouquet in his hands.
Why don't you get me flowers like that?
Because I'm not trying to impress you.
You're worse than those boys back at the palace, I said, shaking my head. She's going to be the Queen of France. Girls like us are hard to amaze.
I know.
He looked idiotically happy.
Guess I'm just lucky.
The stairs lowered from the plane, and two guards came down before Camille. She was a willowy thing, blonde and petite, with a face that looked eternally well-rested and excited. In person and in print, I'd never seen her wearing anything that remotely resembled a frown. There was protocol to follow, but Aaron and Camille bypassed it, running into each other's arms. He held her tightly and kissed every corner of her face, ruining half of his flowers in the process. Camille laughed as he peppered her with affection, and I felt a little awkward standing there, waiting for it to end so I could say hello.
I have missed you so,
she cried, her accent making each word sound like a surprise.
I have so much to show you. I asked Mom and Dad to make you a permanent suite, so you will always have the best room when you come.
Oh, Erin, so generous for me.
He turned, grinning from ear to ear, suddenly recalling my presence.
You remember my sister, of course.
We curtsied to each other and she rose elegantly.
Your Highness, so nice to see you again. I bring gifts for you.
For me?
Yes, here is a secret,
she said, leaning in.
You can wear all of them.
I perked up. Wonderful. Maybe I'll have to use some of it at the party I'm throwing for you tonight. She gasped and placed both hands on her chest.
For me?
She turned her blue eyes on Aaron.
Really?
Really?
It was strange to see him with this look in his eyes, like maybe he was in the middle of an act of worship, prepared to sacrifice anything to please Camille.
Your family is so good to me. Let's go. I'm dying to see your mother.
I tried to keep up with him on the ride back to the palace, but Aaron spoke mostly in French for her benefit, and since I had chosen to master Spanish, I was completely in the dark. Once we got home, Mom, Dad, Caden, and Austin were all waiting on the front stairs for us. Positioned on the edges of the steps, trying to be inconspicuous, were several photographers. Aaron exited first, holding out his hand to help Camille. When I scooted over and reached for him, it turned out he'd already run off with Camille, who was rushing into my mother's arms. Mom, Dad, and Caden all knew French and were greeting her warmly. I walked over to Austin, who looked like he was itching to climb on something. What are you up to today? I asked.
I don't know.
Go find the selected guys and ask them awkward questions. Report back. He laughed and went running.
Where's he off to?
Dad asked quietly.
Nowhere.
Let's all go inside, Mom announced. You should nap before tonight. Edlin's been working so hard on this party. It's going to be wonderful. I'd thought of everything. The music was live, suitable for slow dancing, and there was a mix of foods, both from Ilia and France, as well as some of those delicious apple fritters Henry had made for me. I couldn't wait for him to see. Mom looked radiant as always, and Dad didn't seem quite so worn out. Josie was right at home, and I was pleased because for once she hadn't stolen a tiara. Caden was like a little ambassador, walking around the room and shaking hands. I was, of course, staying close to the happy couple, which was both captivating and draining. Aaron looked at Camille like she hung the sun in the sky every morning. It was beautiful the way he watched her, enchanted by every breath that came out of her mouth. But I felt strangely detached from it all, because no one had ever done that for me, and I'd never done that for anyone else. I found myself jealous of Camille. Not for having the unwavering love of my brother, which I knew to be one of the steadiest forces in the world, but because everything about her came so effortlessly. What had the French queen done to raise her like this? Camille was delicate and sweet, and yet no one would think to try and walk all over her. I kept up with international affairs, and I knew her people cherished her. Last year on her birthday, an impromptu party started in the streets in her honor and lasted for 3 days. 3 days! I thought my education was fair and well-rounded, which meant one thing. My shortcomings had nothing to do with how or what I was taught, but with me alone. The realization forced me to step away from her and Aaron. Standing near her only made me feel worse. Before I could get too far, Ian was in front of me, holding out his arm.
Long time no see.
I rolled my eyes. I see you every day. I laced my arm through his all the same.
But we don't get to speak. I've been wondering how you're doing.
Excellent, can't you tell? I'm running around like a crazy person trying to date while being accused of faking it all, and my brother is in love with a perfect girl, and I know eventually she's going to steal him away.
Steal him?
I nodded. When they finally do get married, which will require her mother's express approval and a lengthy engagement to plan what will surely be the most ostentatious wedding anyone has ever seen, he'll have to live in France with her. He said, leading me to the dance floor and placing a hand on my waist.
I can't do much about your brother, but if he does end up leaving, you still have someone you can always depend on.
Would you happen to be speaking about yourself? I teased, swaying to the music.
Of course.
he replied. My offer still stands. I haven't forgotten it. As I took in the room, with all its trappings and important guests, it was hard to deny just how well he fit in with the crowd. Ever since Ian had arrived, he'd carried himself with a kind of poise that few people possessed. If I hadn't known better, I would have guessed that he grew up in a palace as well. If there's any truth to that article, you don't have to torture yourself with these little boys. I will be everything you could ask for in a husband. I will be faithful, kind, and a true helper. I will never demand love from you, and I will be more than happy simply to live by your side. I still couldn't understand his motivation. In some ways, he could do so much better. I thank you again for your offer, but I haven't given up on the selection yet. Ian cocked his head to the side, smiling slyly.
Oh, but I think you have.
And why is that? I tried to match his know-it-all attitude as best I could.
Because I'm still here, and if you were really hoping to find love, I can't see why you would keep me around.
We were both grinning at the audacity of his statement as I stopped dancing, pulling my hands away slowly. I could send you home right now, you know.
But you won't,
he assumed, that impish grin still plastered to his face.
You know I can give you the one thing you really want, and you're the only one who can give me what I want.
Which is?
Comfort. Comfort in exchange for freedom.
He shrugged.
I think that's a pretty good deal.
He bowed.
See you tomorrow, Your Highness.
I couldn't stand that he was probably the only person here more calculating than I was. He knew exactly what I wanted, and how far I was willing to go to get it, which was irritating. I was close to the side door of the great room and slipped into the hallway for a moment to be by myself. I rubbed my cheeks, so tired of smiling. It was cooler out here, and much easier to think.
Your Highness?
Eric came down the hall in the smartest suit I'd seen him in to date. His hair was neater than usual, slightly slicked back. He looked taller, prouder. My jaw fell open at the change. He looked positively gorgeous.
You clean up nice,
I said, trying to get my expression somewhere close to normal again.
Oh, he looked down. I was aiming for appropriate.
You did much better than that. I pushed myself off the wall to face him.
You think? Hale told me I should consider thinner ties.
I giggled. Well, Hale is pretty gifted when it comes to style, but you look very good. He stood there, clearly ill at ease with the praise.
So are you enjoying the party?
I peeked back into the room. It's a success, don't you think? Good food, excellent music, a wide range of company. It might be the best party I've ever thrown.
So diplomatic, he said.
I turned back to Eric and smiled. I feel like I'm the one competing tonight.
With who?
He asked, shocked. Camille, of course. I looked back into the room, trying to hide behind the door as I watched. Eric came beside me, and we both followed her as she danced with Aaron across the floor.
That's ridiculous.
That's kind of you, but I know better. She's everything I try to be. I'd thought this to myself before, but I'd never admitted it to anyone. I wasn't sure how Eric managed to make me want to confide this in him.
But why would you try to be her, when Edlin is more than enough?
I whipped my head back to him, as if the concept was unimaginable. I was in a constant state of striving. I was never enough. Eric's words nearly brought tears to my eyes, and I reached down to take his hand, as I'd done in my bedroom not that long ago. I'm so glad I got to meet you. However this whole thing ends, I think I've been enlightened just by crossing paths with some of you. He smiled.
And I'll never be able to express what a privilege it's been to know you.
I think I meant to shake his hand, but we ended up standing there, connected in silence for a while. Did you put your name in? I asked suddenly. For the selection, I mean. He smiled and shook his head. No. Why not? He shrugged, searching for an answer.
Because... who am I?
You're Aiko. He stood there, slightly dazed at the sound of his given name. Finally, he smiled again.
Yes, I'm Aiko, but you barely know me.
I know Aiko as well as he knows Edlin, and I can tell you, you are enough as well. He rubbed his thumb against the back of my hand, the tiniest movement, and I could sense we were both wondering what would have happened if his name had been in one of those baskets. Maybe he'd be one of the contenders. Maybe he wouldn't have been picked at all. It was hard to say if the risk would have been worth it in the end. I should get back in there. I pointed over my shoulder to the party.
Of course. See you.
I focused on my posture and stood as tall as I could, which was much more impressive in these heels Camille brought me. I walked into the room, graciously greeting everyone with a bow of my head. I could have stopped a dozen times, but I pushed on until I found Henry.
Hello,
he greeted. I meant to go see him a dozen times this week, but between dating at top speed, doing damage control, and planning for Camille, I hadn't gotten to speak to Henry at all. I could see that he was anxious, and though I was sure Eric conveyed everything I'd said, I think we both knew we needed to actually speak, just the two of us. Okay? I asked. He nodded.
And you okay?
I nodded. With that, he let out a massive sigh, and the bright face I'd come to expect was back again. I tried to think of all the disagreements and misunderstandings I'd had in my life. There was no way any of them was ended with less than 5 words. But that was genuinely all I needed from Henry, to know his regret at possibly offending me, without wishing at all that he could take back that kiss. Maybe Eric had nothing to worry about. Maybe Henry and I could communicate just fine. Dance? I asked, pointing to the floor.
Please.
I was nearly as tall as him in these shoes, and he wasn't much of a dancer. But what he lacked in grace, he made up for with enthusiasm. He spun me several times, and even dipped me twice. When I came up the second time, laughing, I spotted Eric over his shoulder. I could have been wrong, but his shy smile looked a little sad. Chapter 31. Camille looked flawless on the front of every paper, and a few of the gossip magazines that tended to equate our family with movie stars and singers. She brightened the mood in the women's room simply by sitting there, and Aunt May came to visit for a few days solely to see her. I knew why I had problems with Josie. She was bratty and juvenile, and tried so hard to be me that I felt like I had to be overly guarded when she was near. But it was more complicated with Camille. Even her perfection was a quiet thing, as if she hardly noticed it at all. So though I really, really wanted to hate her, I knew that would look much worse for me than for the sweet, unassuming French girl.
How is your mother?
Mom asked Camille. And something about her tone made it seem like she felt obligated to inquire about Queen Daphne. It was the one subject that seemed to take any effort between them. Mom handed her a cup of tea, and Camille happily took it, pausing as she thought through her answer.
Very well. She wanted me to send you her love.
I've been seeing pictures of her lately, and she looks the most content I've ever seen her.
Mom placed her hands in her lap, smiling kindly. This comment felt more genuine.
She is, Camille agreed. I don't know what's come over her, but she has never been more joyful. And her happiness only makes me happier.
Her eyes grew soft at the thought of her mother, and again I was forced to wonder exactly what was going on in the French palace.
So, Josie said,
crossing her legs quite dramatically and taking over the conversation.
Any chance we'll be hearing wedding bells in your future?
Camille bashfully looked away, and everyone laughed.
Perhaps, she hedged. I know Erin is the one, but we both want to find the proper time.
Miss Marley sighed. So I suppose in the middle of the selection is not at the top of the list?
Never.
Camille laid a hand on my lap.
I wouldn't take this moment from such a dear friend.
Miss Marley and Miss Lucy clutched their hands together at the thought.
Which reminds me, Camille straightened up. Edlen, you have told me nothing. What are these boys like?
I chuckled. More trouble than they're worth. Oh, stop, Mom teased.
Please, don't tell me anything about Kyle. Ick,
Josie protested. Her mother swatted her leg. I need an update, too, Aunt May insisted. I missed a lot. I saw there was a fight. There was. I rolled my eyes, remembering. The truth is, I'm still getting to know most of them, I admitted. There are a few standouts, but things change from day to day, so it's hard to measure who might be better than anyone else.
Measure?
Camille sounded sad.
There is no measure. Isn't there one person who fills your heart and takes up all your thoughts?
As she said it, a name popped into my head. And I was so surprised that anyone came to mind at all, that I didn't have time to absorb exactly who it was. I forced myself to concentrate on the conversation. I guess I'm just not as romantically inclined as some people.
Obviously,
Josie muttered under her breath. Either Camille didn't hear her, or she dismissed it.
I believe you will find a wonderful husband. I cannot wait to see.
The conversation drifted away, and I listened quietly. I wasn't sure if I needed to stay in the room all day, or if I was supposed to go work with Dad. It seemed like I'd been doing everything wrong lately, and I didn't want to add to my running list of mistakes. And I liked girl talk, but I needed a little break. I excused myself and made my way into the hall, not sure of where I would go. 15 minutes. I promised myself after that I'd go back and be vibrant and engaging. By pure luck, I caught Hale on his way out to the gardens, holding a tray with carafes of water on it. He saw me and broke into a giant smile.
Where are you off to?
He asked. Nowhere, really. Taking a break from the women's room.
Some of the guys are playing baseball outside, if you want to come.
I went over to the window, and sure enough, maybe 8 of the boys were out there tossing a ball. Where did they even get that stuff?
Austin.
Of course, Austin had everything. I watched the boys roll up their pant legs and slide off their dress shoes, pushing one another jovially. I've never played baseball, I admitted.
All the more reason to join us.
Can you play?
I'm more of a pitcher than a hitter, but I do all right. And I'll teach you.
Hale's face was so genuine, I really believed he'd take care of me out there. Okay, but I'll probably be rotten.
Since when are you rotten at anything?
He said, leading us out the doorway. Kyle was there, as were Apsel, Tavish, and Harrison. Alex was there, too, and I hated to admit that I'd been very tempted to send him back to Calgary ever since Mila blabbed to the papers. I was still considering it. Henry was stretching next to Lind, so I instinctively looked for Eric. He was there, sitting on one of the stone benches.
Your Highness, Edwin called, getting my attention. Are you here to watch?
No, sir. I'm here to play. Several of the boys clapped or cheered, though I seriously doubted any of them considered me a positive addition.
Okay, okay, I said loudly, raising my arms. Just keep in mind that I need to be back inside in a few minutes. And I've never played before. At all. But I thought I'd give it a quick go before I get to work again.
You've got this,
Tavish assured me. Here, give me your shoes.
I'll put them by mine.
I slipped off my heels and placed them in his hands.
Ugh, these are heavy. How do you lift your feet?
Strong calves?
He laughed and carried my shoes to the side. All right, Edlin's up first then,
Kyle insisted.
I had a general understanding of how the game worked. 3 outs, 4 bases. What I was lost on were the mechanics.
Hale was standing out in the middle of the diamond, practicing his pitches with Apsel. Raoul, who was going to be catching, came up behind me.
Here's what you need to do,
he said. He had a thick Hispanic accent, but his instructions were nice and clear.
You grab the bat here and here,
he demonstrated, clutching the bat firmly toward the bottom.
Legs apart and keep your back foot dug into the grass, okay?
Okay.
Just watch the ball.
Watch the ball. All right. Raoul passed me the bat, which weighed much more than I expected.
Good luck.
Thanks. I stood at the makeshift base, trying to do everything Raoul had told me to. I supposed if Hale was pitching, then he and I were on different teams. All the same, he was grinning when he saw me in my stance.
It'll come in slow, okay?
I nodded. He threw the ball and I swung well above it. The same thing happened the second time. I wasn't sure what happened with the third, but I ended up spinning around. Hale laughed and so did Raoul, and while I typically would have felt embarrassed, this didn't seem too bad.
Edlin! Edlin!
I recognized my mother's voice instantly, and I faced the open windows of the women's room. Everyone was there, and I waited for her to order me back inside.
Get them! She yelled. Hit it!
Aunt May raised her arms in the air.
Go, Edie!
The rest of the girls joined in, shouting and clapping. I laughed and turned back to Hale. He gave me a nod. I returned it, gripping the bat. I finally connected with the ball, sending it low and to the left. I shrieked, dropped the bat so I could pick up my dress, and bolted to the first base.
Go, Edie, go! Kyle screamed.
I saw Henry chasing the ball, so I headed to the second base, watching him the whole time. I wasn't going to make it. Impulsively, I lunged, falling into the base. I beat him. Everyone erupted. It wasn't even still my turn, and it wasn't like I'd won, but it felt huge. Suddenly, Edwin lifted me up off the ground and hugged me, swinging me around. Moments later, Mom and Josie and all the other ladies were outside, slipping off their shoes and demanding a turn. Someone alerted Dad and my brothers to the game, and Caden showed everyone what a superior athlete he was. Mom and Dad stood off to the side, arms around each other. The selected boys patted one another on the back, and Aaron snuck away with Camille, kissing her every step of the way.
Go, Henry!
I yelled when he came up to bat. Eric sneaked up beside me and joined in. We were both a little too dignified to jump around, but we pumped our fists in the air.
Isn't this great?
I said. I love that he can just play without worrying about words.
Me too, Eric agreed. I can't believe you hit that ball.
I laughed.
I know, it was completely worth getting my dress dirty for.
Agreed. Is there anything you can't do?
He teased. Plenty, I said, soberly thinking over my many faults.
Like what?
Speak Finnish? He laughed.
Okay, so one thing. That's forgivable.
What about you?
Eric looked around.
I couldn't run a country.
I waved my hand.
Trust me, if I can learn to do it, anybody could.
Mom rushed up, embracing me.
This was a great idea.
The boys did it, I explained. I happened to be in the right place to get an invitation. I looked past her, watching Dad walk up to the plate.
Go, Daddy, go!
He lifted his arm, pointing into the distance, and Mom shook her head.
Not gonna happen, she mumbled.
As she guessed, he completely struck out. We clapped for him anyway, celebrating as the game continued on, with no one keeping score. For just one moment, we were happy. My family and friends swarmed around me, laughing and clapping and enjoying the sun. Mom wrapped me up in another hug, kissing my head and telling me how proud she was of my hit, though I didn't even try again the whole time. Austin ran in circles, disrupting things and making everyone laugh. Josie had stolen one of the boys' dress shirts and was wearing it open over her dress, looking silly and completely delighted. It was a bubble of pure joy. There were no cameras around to capture it, no reporters to tell the world about it. And for some reason, that made it so much better. Chapter 32. I wanted to live in that place, to forget about all the worries hanging over my family, threatening to drop at any moment. But the peace was gone by dinner. Some of the selected boys who missed out on the game were complaining that they should have been told about it. The ones who were present, they claimed, had gotten an unfair amount of additional FaceTime with me, and they were asking for some sort of group date for them. They elected Winslow to tell me this, and he stood in front of me with puppy dog eyes, relaying the collective dejection of the group. We were outside the dining hall, where he caught me as I was heading back to my room. "We're simply asking for another group date to keep things fair." I rubbed my temple. It wasn't exactly a date. There was no planning involved, and my family was with me for most of it, including my younger brothers.
"We understand that, and we're willing to do any planning, if you'll agree to come."
I sighed, frustrated. How many people would it be, exactly?
"Only 8. Ian asked not to be included."
I smirked to myself. Of course, Ian wanted nothing to do with a bunch of boys grumbling about more time. It made me wonder if I should go grab him right now for a date, simply to make a point. I suspected he'd hoped for just that. "You organize the date, and I'll do my best to make time for it." Winslow beamed.
"Thank you, Your Highness."
"But," I added quickly, "please pass along to the others that griping like this does not elevate my opinion of you. If anything, this is a bit childish, so you'd better make this the date of your lives." Winslow's face fell as I walked past him and up the stairs. 2 more months. I could do this. Admittedly, there were as many lows as there were highs, but I sensed the worst had passed. I was feeling less intimidated by the boys after the game, and I felt sure I could give Dad the time he needed. I still wasn't quite certain what to do with my heart. I rounded the stairs to the 3rd floor, catching Aaron leaving his room. He'd changed out of his suit coat and into a vest, and I felt sure he was heading to Camille's new suite. "Do you ever stop smiling?" I asked, unable to believe his face could hold that pose for so many days straight.
"Not when she's here."
He straightened his vest.
"Do I look okay?"
"As always. I'm sure she doesn't care one way or another. She's as head over heels for you as you are for her." He sighed.
"I think so too. I hope so."
It was like he was already gone. In his mind, he was in Paris, showering Camille with kisses and debating what to name their children. I felt him leaving me. I wasn't ready. I swallowed, daring to say what I'd been deliberating over for a very long time. "Look, Aaron, she's a great girl. There's no denying it. But maybe she's not the one." His smile finally faltered.
"What do you mean?"
"Just that you might want to consider other options. There are so many eligible girls in Ilia that you've completely bypassed. Don't rush into something that you can't undo. If you and Camille broke up, it would be nothing. If you got divorced, we could lose our alliance with France." Aaron stared at me.
"Edlin, I know you're hesitant to fall in love, but I know how I feel about her. Just because you're scared—"
"I'm not scared," I insisted. "I'm trying to help you. I love you maybe more than anyone. I'd do nearly anything for you, and I thought you'd do the same for me." Every ounce of happiness left his face.
I would. You know I would.
Then please, think about it. That's all I'm asking. He nodded, running his fingers over his mouth and cheeks, looking concerned, almost lost. Aaron brought his eyes to mine, gave me a tiny smile, and opened his arms for a hug. He held me tightly, like he'd never needed a hug so badly in his life.
I love you, Edie.
And I love you. He kissed my hair and let me go, continuing on to Camille's room. Nina was waiting for me with my nightgown ready. Any plans for the evening, or do you want to dress for bed? Bed, I assured her. But wait until you hear what these boys are doing now. I told her about the demanded group date, adding that Ian had excused himself from it. Smart move on his part, she agreed. I know. I keep wondering if that warrants a special date just for him. A real date or a spite date? I laughed. I hardly know. Ugh, what am I supposed to do with all these boys? Weed them out. Huh, I found a piece of grass we missed earlier. She pulled the blade around for me to see before tossing it in the trash. That was so much fun, I said. I'll never forget Mom's face, hanging out of the window telling me to go for it. I was sure I was in trouble. I wish I could have seen that. You really don't need to hide in my room all day. It's always clean, and it doesn't take too long for me to get dressed in the morning. You should come with me places, see more of the palace than this room and yours. She shrugged. Perhaps. But I could hear in her voice that she was excited about the possibility. I wondered if I should train Nina for travel. It would be nice to have her with me next time I went abroad. But if she really was planning on leaving within the next year or so, it might not be worth it. I knew I couldn't keep one maid forever, but I dreaded the thought of someone replacing her. I went down for breakfast the next day and noticed that Aaron didn't come. I worried he was upset with me. We never stayed cross with each other for long, but I hated when that happened at all. Aaron felt like a piece of me sometimes. I didn't notice until a bit later that Camille didn't make it either. I assumed one of two things had happened. Aaron had come to his senses and told her that he needed to consider other options, and they were both in the process of avoiding each other. Or they'd spent the night together and were maybe still in bed. I wondered what Dad would think about that. Then I realized that a few of the boys were missing as well. Maybe Camille and Aaron weren't wrapped in each other's arms after all. It was possible there was a bug going around. That was far more likely, and much less exciting. I left the dining hall to find Leland and Ivan waiting for me. They both bowed deeply.
Your Highness, Ivan greeted, your presence is requested in the great room for the greatest date of your life.
I smirked. Oh, really? Leland chuckled.
We were up all night working. Please say you're free right now.
I checked the clock on the wall. I have maybe an hour. Ivan perked up.
That's plenty of time. Come with us.
They both offered their elbows, and I grabbed onto them, allowing myself to be escorted into the great room. Along the back wall, a small stage had been set up, and covered with what appeared to be tablecloths from our Christmas supplies. Spotlights that we sometimes brought out for parties were aimed at the center of the stage, and as we approached, the boys all shushed one another as they stood in a line. I was brought to the lone chair right in front of the stage, and I took my seat, simultaneously curious and confused. Winslow spread his arms wide.
Welcome to the first ever selection variety show, starring a bunch of losers competing for your attention.
I laughed. At least they owned it. Calvin jumped off to the side and sat at the piano, playing music that had a ragtime feel, and everyone left the stage except for Winslow. He bowed solemnly, but when he stood back up, he smiled hugely, bringing three beanbags in front of him. Then he started juggling. It was so silly, I had to laugh. Winslow turned to the side, and from offstage, someone threw a fourth beanbag, then a fifth, and sixth. He managed to keep them going for a couple of tosses before they all fell to the ground, with one slapping him on the head. Everyone lamented, but applauded his efforts. Even me. Lodge got out a bow and arrow, and a target covered with balloons, then managed to shoot and pierce each one. As they burst, glitter flew out of them, slowly settling on the floor. All the while, Calvin played on, switching up tunes for each act. Fox, who I was surprised would rope himself into another group date, got on stage and drew. Horribly. I was sure Austin had made better stick figures as a child. But since this show seemed to either be highlighting their strengths in a ludicrous way, or shrugging off their weaknesses as comedy, it ended up being quite charming. I was trying to think of a way to inconspicuously pilfer the picture he drew of me, which was little more than a balloon-shaped head and some brown waves of hair coming off it. I'd been drawn and painted countless times, but they never came out that sweet. Leland sang, Julian hula-hooped, Ivan bounced a soccer ball for an incredibly long time, and Gunnar read a poem.
Our lovely Princess Edlin, it's hard to rhyme your name, and though we really ticked you off, we love you all the same.
I giggled the whole way through it, as did most of the boys. The grand finale was the eight of them cluttered on stage dancing. Well, trying to dance. There was a lot of grinding and hip shaking, to the point that I blushed a few times. In the end, I really was impressed. They'd organized the whole thing overnight, both trying to entertain me and apologize at the same time. There was something really sweet about it. I applauded them as they had their final bow, giving them a standing ovation. All right, I should go to work. But what if I get some drinks in here for us instead, and we talk for a bit? They all answered affirmatively over one another, so I sent for tea and water and some cold drinks as well. We didn't bother with rolling out tables, and instead sat on the floor. Sometimes, these pain-in-the-neck boys could be so nice. Aaron didn't come to dinner either. I watched as the selected boys filed in, and all our guests. Then Mom, who was running a little late. But no Aaron. Dad leaned over to me.
Where is your brother?
I shrugged, cutting my chicken. I don't know. I haven't seen him today.
That's not like him.
I glanced around the room, looking at the remaining 19 candidates. Kyle gave me a wink, and Henry waved. Every time I looked at Gunnar, all I could think about was his silly poem. Fox nodded his head at me as our eyes met. And when Raoul stretched, I remembered the care he took teaching me to grip a bat. Oh no. It had happened. Even with the boys I hadn't spent much time with, I knew that each of them had a hold on me in some way. I already knew that some of them had claimed a spot in my ever-terrified heart. But how had it come to pass that they all mattered? I felt a heaviness settle in my chest. I was going to miss these loud, strange boys. Because even if I miraculously found one to stay with me in the end, there was no way to keep them all. I was thinking about how worried I used to be about losing my quiet house when Gavril walked in, one of the news staff we kept around for the report trailing him. He bowed in front of the head table, looking at Dad.
I'm so sorry to bother you, Your Majesty.
Not at all. What's wrong?
Gavril glanced at all the watching eyes.
May I approach you?
Daddy nodded, and Gavril whispered something in his ear. Dad squinted in disbelief.
Married?
He asked, only loud enough that probably Mom and I could hear. He pulled back to look into Gavril's eyes.
Her mother approved. It's been done. All legal. He's gone.
My body turned cold, and I ran from the room.
No, no, no,
I mumbled, rushing up the stairs. I went to Aaron's room first. Nothing. Everything looked pristine. No sign of packing or an urgent exit. But more important, no sign of my brother. I tore from the room, heading to Camille's suite. I'd peeked in the day before and had seen her trunks spilling open with so many outfit choices, they probably could have filled my closet. The trunks were still there, all but the smallest. And no Camille. I fell into the wall, in far too much shock to process this. Aaron was gone. He'd eloped and left me here alone. I stood there in a daze, not sure what to do. Could I get him back? Gavril said something about legal. What did that mean? Was there any way to undo this? My world felt dimmer, slightly misaligned and wrong. How was I supposed to do anything without Aaron? I ended up in my room without realizing I'd even walked there. Nina held out an envelope to me.
Aaron's butler delivered this for you about half an hour ago.
I snatched the paper from her hands.
Edlin, on the off chance that the news has not reached you by the time this letter does, let me tell you what I've done. I've gone to France with Camille, and pending her parents' approval, I intend to marry her immediately. I'm sorry to have run off without you, and to have excluded you and Mom and Dad from what I always knew would be the happiest day of my life, but I felt like I had no choice. After speaking with you last night, the last few years made perfect sense to me. I always assumed your dislike for Camille stemmed from you both being in the same situation. You're young, beautiful women who will inherit a throne. And you and she handled this position in vastly different ways. She is open to everything while you keep people at a distance. She deals out her power with humility while you wield yours like a sword. I hate to be so blunt, though I'm sure you already know this about yourself. Still, it brings me no joy to say it. But your positions are not the reason you dislike her so. You don't like Camille because she's the only person who could ever separate you and me. Your words hit me so hard, Edlin, because I wanted to believe you. I wanted to hear you out and consider your suggestions. I knew that if I did, one day you'd convince me to give up everything for you. Maybe even put your crown on my head. And heaven knows I would have done it. I would do anything for you. So before you could ask for my life, I gave it to Camille. I wish you could find love, Edlin. The reckless, relentless kind that consumes you. If you could, then maybe you'd understand. I hope someday you will. My happiness with Camille is tarnished by one thing, that I may be estranged from you if you choose not to forgive me. That sadness will be great, but far more bearable than my separation from my soulmate. Even as I write this, I miss you. I cannot imagine us being so far apart. Please find a way to forgive me, and know that I love you. Maybe not as deeply as you'd like, but still. As a testimony to my desire to always be there for you, I want to give you one last piece of information, something that may help you in the coming months. More provinces are protesting the monarchy than you could guess. Not all of them, but plenty. And while it pains me to tell you this, the problem people have with the monarchy stems from one person. You. I don't know why. Perhaps because of your youth. Perhaps because of your gender. Perhaps for reasons none of us could believe. But they worry. Dad's aging beyond his years. The stress of the amount of things he's accomplished in his reign is bigger than his predecessors. And the general population thinks you will ascend soon. They are not prepared. I hate saying those words to you, but you've already kind of guessed at this. I didn't want to let you dwell on those thoughts, hoping you could move past it. And I only tell you this because I think you can change their minds. Stop holding everyone at bay, Edlin. You can be brave and still be feminine. You can lead and still love flowers. Most important, you can be queen and still be a bride. I think those who cannot know you the way I do would finally have a glimpse of this side of you if you consider finding a mate. I could be wrong, but just in case this is the last time you ever want to speak to me, I must give you the only piece of advice I can.
I hope you can forgive me. Your brother, your twin, your other piece, Aaron.
Chapter 33. I stared at the letter for the longest time. He left me. He left me for her. When the finality of it hit me, I was consumed by a wild rush of rage. I picked up the closest breakable thing and flung it across the room with every ounce of strength I had. I heard Nina gasp as the glass shattered against the wall, and that brought me back. I had completely forgotten she was there. Through heavy breaths, I shook my head. I'm sorry. I'll fix it. I didn't mean to frighten you. He's gone.
Aaron's gone.
What?
He eloped with Camille.
I ran my fingers through my hair, feeling slightly unhinged. I can't imagine why the Queen would have authorized something like this. But she unquestionably did. Gavril said it was legal downstairs.
So what does that mean?
I swallowed. With Camille in line for her throne, and Aaron as her prince consort, his primary duty is to France now. Ilya is nothing more than the country he was born in.
Do your parents know?
I nodded, but I'm not sure if he sent them letters as well. I should go to them. Nina came over and smoothed out my dress and my hair. She took a tissue to my face, blotting away any imperfections. There now, that's how my future queen should look. I threw my arms around her.
You're too good to me, Nina.
Hush, go to your parents, they need you. I stepped back and swiped at the tears that were so, so close to falling. I went down the hall, knocking on the door to Dad's room, which they generally shared. No one answered, so I risked a quick peek inside. Dad? I stepped into the huge space. I hadn't been here in so long, maybe since I was a child. And I couldn't remember if it had always been this way. The room looked more like something Mom would have decorated than him. Warm colors on the walls, books everywhere. If this was his retreat, why didn't it feel like him at all? Without Mom and Dad joining me, I felt like I was intruding and turned to go. But I was stopped in my tracks by the sight behind me. Several large, framed pictures covered the wall. There was one of Mom and Dad when they were my age, with him in his full suit and sash next to Mom in a cream-colored dress. I saw them on their wedding day, their faces covered in cake. Then there was Mom, her hair slicked back with sweat, holding two babies in her arms as Dad kissed her forehead, a tear falling down his cheek. Several candid shots, like a kiss or a smile, had been blown up and changed to black and white, making them seem more classic than casual. Two things became instantly clear. First, the reason Dad's room didn't feel like it was completely his was because it wasn't. He had all but turned it into a shrine to Mom, or rather, a shrine to the two of them and how deeply they loved each other. I saw it every day, but it was different seeing the images they both looked at before falling asleep each night. They were meant to be, even after dozens of obstacles, and they liked to be reminded of it constantly. Second, I could see why Aaron would give me up, give all of us up, for a chance at this. If he even got a scrap of the love Mom and Dad had, it would be justified. In that moment, I knew I needed to tell them what Aaron's letter said. They would understand, perhaps better than anyone on the planet, why he had to go. They'd certainly understand better than I could. They weren't in the dining hall, or Dad's office, or Mom's room. In fact, the hallways were abnormally empty. There wasn't a single guard in sight.
Hello?
I called into the dimly lit air.
Hello?
Finally, a pair of guards came running around the corner.
Thank God, one said. Go to the king and tell him we found her.
The second guard raced away while the first faced me and took a deep breath.
You need to come with me to the hospital wing, Your Highness. Your mother has had a heart attack.
As quiet as it was, it sounded like he was screaming. I couldn't think of what to say or do, but I knew I had to get to her. Even in heels, I outpaced the guard, running as fast as I could. The only thoughts passing through my head were how wrong I'd been about so many things, how snippy I'd been with her when I'd wanted my way, and I was sure that she knew I loved her, and I needed to tell her one more time. In front of the hospital wing, Aunt May sat next to Miss Marley, who appeared to be deep in prayer. Austin, mercifully, wasn't present, but Caden was there trying so hard to look brave. Lady Bryce was there as well, pacing on the outskirts of the scene. But the true fear of the moment was summed up in Dad. He clung to General Ledger, holding on to him for dear life, his fingers digging into the back of his uniform. He was unabashedly crying, and I never heard such a painful sound. I hoped I never would again.
I can't lose her. I don't know.
General Ledger grabbed him by the shoulders.
Don't think about that now. We need to believe she'll be fine, and you need to think about your children.
Dad nodded, but I could tell he didn't quite believe he was capable.
Daddy?
I called, my voice breaking. He turned to me and opened his arms. I bolted right to him, squeezing him. I let myself cry, not concerned with pride at the moment.
What happened?
I don't know, honey. I think the shock of Aaron leaving was too much. Heart problems run in her family, and she's been so anxious lately.
His voice changed, and I knew he wasn't really talking to me anymore.
I should have made her rest more. I should have asked her for less. She did everything for me.
General Ledger grabbed his arm.
You know how stubborn she is,
he said kindly.
Do you think for one second she'd have let you make her slow down?
They both shared a sad smile. Dad nodded.
Okay, so now we wait.
General Ledger let him go.
I need to go home and tell Lucy and get fresh clothes. I'll call her mother if you haven't already.
Dad sighed to himself.
I didn't even think about it.
I got it, and I'll be back within an hour. Whatever you need, I'm here.
Dad let me go and embraced General Ledger once more.
Thank you.
I walked away, going to stand by the door. I wondered if she could sense I was near. I felt so angry. At everyone. At me. If the people hadn't asked for so much, or if I had done more. I wasn't ready to lose my mother. I kept thinking that I couldn't live my life for other people, that love was nothing but chains. And maybe it was. But so help me, I needed these chains. I let myself feel the weight of Aaron leaving, the weight of my father's worry, and most important, the weight of my mother's life hanging in the balance. These things didn't make me weaker. They held my soul to the earth. I wasn't going to run from them anymore. I turned at the sound of the footsteps, aware that a mass of people was approaching. I was humbled, moved beyond words, to see each of the selected come around the corner. Kyle looked at me.
We've come to pray.
Tears filled my eyes and I nodded. The gentlemen scattered, some leaning in a corner and others perching on benches. They bowed their heads or lifted them, all for my mother. They'd caused such an upheaval in my life, and I was so glad they did. Hale kept his fist to his mouth, rocking on his feet nervously. Ian, as I expected, was very steady, arms crossed in concentration. Henry leaned forward on his bench, his curls flopping over his eyes. And I was happy to see that, even though he didn't need to come, Eric stood beside him. Kyle found his mother, and they held each other. Kyle was actually moved to tears for Mom, and strangely, that tenderness made me feel stronger. My eyes moved from him to the other remaining boys, and I thought again of how each of them had grown on me in his own way. And I looked over at Dad. His face was red from crying, his suit was all rumpled, and I could see the distress in every molecule of his body, horrified at the thought of his wife dying. It wasn't all that long ago that he'd stood where I did, that my mom's face was one of many in his world. And yet, despite all the impediments and all the time that had passed, they were still deeply in love. It was obvious in everything, from their shared room to the way they fretted over each other, to the way they seemed to be incapable of not flirting with each other even after being married so long. If anyone had told me I might consider that a possibility for myself a month ago, I'd have rolled my eyes and walked away. Now? Well, it didn't seem so far-fetched. I didn't expect to find what my parents had, or even what Aaron had found with Camille. But maybe I could find something. Maybe there would be one person who'd still want to kiss me when I had a runny nose, or would rub my shoulders after a long day of meetings. Maybe I could find someone who didn't seem so scary, who made letting him past the wall seem natural. But all that still could be asking for too much. Either way, I couldn't slow now. I knew that for my sake, for my family's sake, I had to finish my selection. And when I did, I'd have a ring on my finger.
This is Brittany Presley. We hope you have enjoyed this unabridged production of The Air by Kira Cass. This program was produced by Elgin Productions. The director was John McElroy. Executive producer, Caitlin Gehring. Text copyright 2015 by Kira Cass. Production copyright 2015 by HarperCollins Publishers. All rights reserved. Thank you for listening.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.